This is KGN News Morning Magazine for Friday, January 7th, 2022. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for joining me here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from a Nepalese family who lost their home last week during the Marshall Fire. After that, we'll tag along with the Nature Almanac team for a winter solstice hike with the Boulder County Nature Association. Finally, we'll have our regular segment, .org, spotlighting the work of a local nonprofit every Friday. At 8:30, Connections comes your way with host Duncan Campbell. He will pay tribute to his friend and a regular caller to the program, Robert Sharp. Sharp passed away on his porch last week during the Marshall Fire. At 9:30, it's Morning Sound Alternative. They will bring you an eclectic mix of music until noon. That's all coming up, but first, these news headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Boulder County officials released updated tallies yesterday of homes and businesses destroyed and damaged by the Marshall Fire. The number of burned homes now stands at 1,084, with 149 residential structures damaged. The fires also destroyed 7 commercial properties, with damage to 30. County officials estimate residential damage is just over $513 million. President Joe Biden will arrive in Colorado today to tour the destruction caused by the fire. Boulder County public health officials are urging residents whose homes remain intact from the Marshall Fire to follow essential safety guidelines when returning to their properties. Officials are warning residents not to disturb ash and debris from the fire. Caustic ash contains cancer-causing substances that, when inhaled, can damage internal organs. Officials recommend a tetanus vaccination for those who have not had a documented dose within the past 10 years, as there is a significant risk of getting tetanus when cleaning up after a fire. Health officials also report the county does not currently have air monitoring in or immediately downwind of the burn area and are urging residents to avoid physical exertion outdoors until officials deem the quality of air safe. Residents can view up-to-date information at boulderoem.com or boco.org/Marshall Fire. Colorado Common Cause, the League of Women Voters Colorado, Mi Familia Vota, New Era Colorado, and the NAACP held a rally yesterday marking the anniversary of the U.S. Capitol insurrection while calling for filibuster reform and passage of voter protection legislation currently stalled in the U.S. Senate. Eunice Brownlee from Common Cause said that the violence that took place a year ago proved how fragile our democracy is.
Unfortunately, January 6th was only the beginning. And elected officials across the country have passed laws, spread disinformation, and changed the rules to make what that violent mob attempted 1 year ago not only easier, but legal. The gravity of this crisis cannot be overstated.
Leaders from Common Cause and the League of Women Voters urged support for the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, Protecting Our Democracy Act, and the Freedom to Vote Act. Among the speakers was Matham Alsodood, a staff member for United States Representative Jason Crow, who read a statement on behalf of the congressman. The Denver Gazette reports a group identified as We the People had planned a rally at the Colorado Capitol later in the day to commemorate last year's January 6th attack, but the rally failed to materialize. The Regional Transportation District announced yesterday that the recent surge in coronavirus cases, along with the agency's worker shortage for bus and rail operators, technicians, and mechanics, are having adverse impacts on the agency's ability to provide scheduled service. The agency reports it has seen 77 COVID-19 employee cases spanning all facilities and operating divisions between December 15th and January 5th, the highest surge since the start of the pandemic. RTD officials recommend customers can stay up to date on service changes by signing up for service alerts through the RTD website. With their current contract set to expire this Saturday, Colorado Kings Super workers formally announced intent to strike. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The United Food and Commercial Workers, UFCW, Local 7 labor union, announced Thursday that their 8,400 Colorado workers will soon announce a start date for the strike in the coming days. The workers plan to strike for better pay and working conditions. The Colorado Newsline reports that the union has been in a heated contract dispute with King Soopers over a labor agreement but now the talks have stalled. The union made the announcement following a near unanimous January 2nd vote by the union's membership to authorize a strike. The union said that workers will be paid $160 a day for picketing full-time and $80 per day for picketing part-time. Kim Cordova, president of UFCW Local 7, said talks to end what she calls is King Soopers unfair labor practices that prevent grocery workers from securing an industry-leading contract. She feels that the grocery store chain continues to bring in record profits while its workforce suffers with low wages amid a skyrocketing cost of living. Representatives for King Soopers said that the company had offered wage increases, expanded health benefits, and signing bonuses as part of its latest offer. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Today's weather along the upper Metro Front Range includes highs in the low 50s for Denver and Boulder and a high near 43 for Fort Collins. Skies in the region will be partly sunny. Tonight, skies will be partly cloudy with lows in the 20s. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 30 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Provin Stresta lost the house he grew up in during last week's Marshall Fire. His parents, who immigrated to the U.S. from Nepal when Provin was 10, had lived in their Superior home for more than 23 years. It was the first house they bought when they got to the U.S. KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with Provin and his parents, who say before the fire destroyed their home, the day started out like any other Thursday.
So on that day, Thursday, I spoke with my mother at around 9 o'clock, which I usually do just before I go to work. She mentioned it was very windy and she was going to just go get some errands done that day with my sister. And my dad was around 10 o'clock. He was going to get a car checked up in Boulder. So he had left home around 10:30. The only person that was in the house was my niece and our little puppy, Peek. At around 12:15, I would say my dad called me and mentioned there was smoke coming up from that area. And he had just spoke with my sister. My sister was frantic. She was crying. She was worried. And she said, when she came into house after doing a little bit of her own errands, she looked up in the sky. It was clear, blue sky, nothing. But little in the distance, she did see a little bit of smoke coming in. So she just figured it was something, maybe a controlled brush fire or something like that. And so she went back into the house. 10 minutes after she got in the house, she looked through the window in the room and she saw, a smoke come in, orange color flare. So she rushed. Banged on my niece's room, got our dog, and just came out. She did mention it was very windy. So when she got out of the house, she was only able to grab, my niece, our dog, and a pair of slippers. She got into the car, and everyone was just coming out of that area. She saw a fire truck come in. The fire trucks weren't letting anybody come in. They were just letting everybody go out. From our area, the Sagamore area, to the Discovery Hill, which is about a mile and a half east of where we live, it took her, 10 minutes to get there because of all the traffic jam that everyone was trying to get out of there. When she got to that little hill on Superior, right by Rock Creek, she looked back through her rearview mirror and all she could see was fire and smoke in our area. At that moment, she knew our house was gone. All this time, I was on the phone with him. I couldn't work. I was at work. My wife was at her work, too. I called her. And at around 5 o'clock when we had that press conference, that's when I knew my house was gone. My dad didn't know. My dad was still, he was very hopeful. He didn't know till 8 p.m. when his friend called him and said all houses in Sacramento was gone. And the hardest impact, emotional impact, my mom and my sister. Because, they lost everything. My mom lost everything. She walked out of the house 10 in the morning that day with what she had, a coat, a jacket, and a suit, and that's all she has.
How long Have you lived in that home?
Like my dad said, that Sagamore area was built in late 90s, 1998. That house was our first house in the United States. My dad and mom worked hard, and they purchased that house while I was still in high school. So, I grew up in that house. They've been living there since June of 1999, so almost 23 years.
A lifetime. Tell me, what does it mean, especially to your family that is facing this situation? What are the special difficulties you are seeing? Your parents are struggling right now.
My parents, migrated to the United States in the early 90s when I was 10 years old. My sister was 5 or 6 years old. They worked hard. They worked hard like any other immigrant to build up an American dream. And to have that house go just like that, devastating, you know, for both of my parents. We built a lot of good memories there. But for them to lose their whole lifelong hard work, earned money, you know, and just vanished in a second, that was very devastating for them. For me too, you know, I grew up in that house, just not a house. We have lots of different memories, you know, Christmas, birthdays. You know, I got married from that house. So there's a lot of attachment in that house.
A lot of history. When you have a second language and your parents, you know, bought the house and make a living and had the American dream, but when we talk about insurance and all these special details, it is so difficult when you have a second language. So is there something that you can say about that?
Yes, having a second language is definitely one of the big obstacles. It's very difficult to communicate, especially when you work with insurance company, because there are so many different vocabularies and languages that we don't quite understand. Again, I myself been getting help from our community. There's been countless Zoom meetings, contact information, lawyers have been on board. There are a couple of lawyers that said, hey, if you don't understand this, if you want a clarification, call me. Apply to FEMA. We've gotten a lot of support from the local government, but there's a disaster relief center in Lafayette. We went there. They were very supportive. You know, my dad, he says, we're so fortunate to be in this country, in the United States. You know, he said, even, you know, not only do they take care of humans, but even the pets, they were handing out pet supplies. They were handing out, pet food, sanitary stuff. You know, they were concerned, where are you living? Are you getting food? Are you getting clothing? Do you have heater, water? You know, and we've just gotten tremendous support from our community, from Superior, from the disaster in the center. I mean, we couldn't really imagine if this had happened back home. You know, I couldn't imagine what it would be like if it had really happened this back in Nepal. First, it's not really custom to have a homeowner's insurance in Nepal. Maybe very few people would have it, but majority of the people don't have homeowner's insurance in Nepal. It's not custom. So, you know, if you don't have that, then again, it will be tough to rebuild back again. Again, the other thing is that the support from the community, feeling that, okay, there's someone that I can turn to. The worst feeling is not having anyone, especially during this huge tragedy. You already have that tragedy and there's no support. There's no emotional support. There's no support from the community or the family. Then it's just devastating. It's so, so devastating. So if it did happen back in Nepal, I think we would have very hard time rebuilding it back. And you would have taken us forever. And just, we couldn't be able to talk to you as I am right now if I was back in the country.
Pravin, also, is there a last message that you would like to give to our listeners?
There are plenty of resources out there, and just, you know, support each other. I think that's that's probably the first step in a healing process in such devastating tragedy that we're all facing right now.
Thank you so much again for sharing with us your thoughts, your feelings, and your experience from this tragedy, you as a family, and I'm so happy that you're getting the support that you need And I hope that you're able to heal, like you are saying, that your whole family is able to rebuild again.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better.
It's January. What's happening in the natural world? To commemorate the new year of 2022, we joined the Boulder County Nature Association on their annual winter solstice hike. In this time of high COVID counts, it was a small group led by Boulder naturalist and KGNU volunteer Elena Claver.
Oh, and look at this. Here's our great blue heron.
Oh, what a great day to
surf. Oh, yes. This is where we're going to be because that's where that great blue heron is. We gather to watch the sunrise. This is the shortest day of the year, and now the light will soon be returning. And so it's just a nice way to get out and enjoy the beauty of Mother Earth, of nature, and recognize this turning point in the year-long calendar as the Earth moves around the sun. So we can kind of make a loose semicircle. If people have something they would like to offer, and we can reflect on them.
My granddaughter was wearing a t-shirt yesterday that said, 80% of my brain is taken up by song lyrics. So,
morning has broken like the first morning. Praise for the singing. Praise for the morning, praise for them springing fresh from the earth.
Thank you.
That was absolutely beautiful. That was worth the walk.
Kingfisher.
Kingfisher.
Oh, yeah, belted kingfisher.
I love watching sunrise as the new hope. There's a lot we have to hope for this next year, and I'm hopeful.
Well, just in my mind, this very short poem came across the synapses of my brain. Omicron will be gone in 22. I hope you are through.
We were out here, it was very cold, the lake was frozen, and there was a three-legged coyote walking across the ice, and that has become a symbol of great persistence to me. How that coyote stayed alive and managed out here, I don't know, but there it was, crossing the ice.
My great memory was seeing a mink fishing in the river right at the beginning of the trail one year, and was just such an elegant, graceful little black flicker through the water and along the bank, and it was such a treat to see that little blessing of fur.
This song was written by Charlie Murphy, who is a dear, dear friend. He wrote it for the winter solstice. I also just want to remember all the people who aren't with us because they're on the other side, and then the people who aren't with us because they couldn't come out. Light is returning, even though it is the darkest hour no one can hold. Back the dawn, let us keep it burning. Let us keep the light of hope alive, make safe our journey through the storm.
Soon after this group of naturalists finished their final winter solstice song, a large bird flew into a cottonwood tree, followed by yet another very big bird.
Two bald eagles flew in, and there's two more coming in the back, but look at how close they are, right above the bridge.
Comes another one?
Yeah.
Soaring down.
So that's four adults and one juvenile. Mm-hmm.
the eagles just took off and they're flying around and landing in that tree. They're just so majestic. Any day that you see an eagle is a good day, I think.
Elena Claver is a KGNU volunteer and a member of the Boulder County Nature Association.
Happy New Year.
Happy solstice.
And a happy solstice.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's look at local nonprofits.
Hi, this is Chris Schultz with KGNU.org, and I'm here with Susan Bonfield from Environment for the Americans. You want to tell us a little bit about your organization and what you guys do?
Yes, Environment for the Americas is a nonprofit organization. We actually launched to be the home of what's now World Migratory Bird Day, and that's a global celebration of migratory birds. And its goal is to raise awareness about migratory birds and ways that people and their communities can get involved in protecting them. We coordinate World Migratory Bird Day across the Americas in Canada, the U.S., Mexico, Central and South America, and the Caribbean. And we have staff located to manage those regions. And they are local biologists and educators who, you know, have the language skills and the cultural knowledge to work with communities to bring them to programs that involve birds and bird conservation. We're also involved in connecting diverse people to nature and birds, of course, through our research programs, training, and also our community education opportunities. We were not only managing World Migratory Bird Day, but we were also doing this research to see how we could engage communities around these natural areas. What we wanted to do was to raise participation in programs and events. And we first learned that a lot of communities weren't participating, and we wanted to know why. What we had learned was that people were more likely to participate if they saw others leading the programs that reflected their own background. So that's when we launched our internship programs, which was to bring diverse faces to these public places. For our internship programs, we work with the National Park Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Bureau of Land Management. We also often work with other nonprofit organizations, such as Audubon chapters across the country. What we have developed over the years is a model for recruiting young, diverse professionals who are interested in science and other natural resource conservation and stewardship fields. We also offer training, so they get a lot of additional opportunities to learn about a whole range of things, from how to apply for a job or how to apply for a federal job, to how to apply to graduate school, or even, you know, something like financial literacy. We keep up with them throughout their internship, so we make sure that they have a positive experience, that we address any issues they might have, and that we make it a really successful program for them. World Migratory Bird Day in 2022 is going to focus on the impacts of light pollution on migratory birds. And we welcome communities who are interested in celebrating migratory birds and their conservation. We'll be organizing some local activities and events. Actually, Migratory Bird Day has grown so much that there are now events, you know, every month of the year. So if someone's looking to participate, they might find an event at, say, Rocky Mountain National Park or other parts of the state, as well as, you know, across the country. And they can visit our websites. We have environmentamericas.org to learn more about Migratory Bird Day and our internship programs.
For their link and another listen, go to our blog at kgnu.org/dotorg.
Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, Elena Claver, Chris Schultz, Rosanna Longo-Better, and Shannon Young for their help with today's show. Stay tuned for Connections with Duncan Campbell just after this news update from the BBC.